Welcome to the Connect You podcast, where we interview guests who have transformed their lives, whether in mind, body, health, or wealth. Connect You seeks to discover what drives people and makes them extraordinary. Brought to you by Lewis Jackson, who brings you exciting real-life stories, hot topics, and the truth.
Right, so welcome back to the Connect You podcast. Today we have Lee Taylor, a serial entrepreneur. This is completely unedited, unscripted. So, Lee, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, Lee, I never really know what to say or where to start these, but let's go right back to the beginning. So please introduce yourself and tell us who Lee Taylor is.
Okay, I'm Lee Taylor. I guess if you want to know more about the entrepreneurial side, I have small businesses. I've had small businesses probably most of my adult life. I got into property developing very, very early age. And although I was employed and I had jobs, I was doing property on the side, which sort of taught me a bit about investing, taught me a bit about business. I liked it. I enjoyed it. It freed me up from the employed route, gave me opportunities to go out and do other things. And I built three businesses off the back of my property portfolio. Two were quite successful and one crashed and burned. So it's not all been success. There's been a lot of failure as well. And yeah, it's been an interesting ride. I've enjoyed it, learned a lot.
So what made you want to go into business itself?
I never wanted to go into business. I always wanted to be in sports. When I was at school, all I did was eat, sleep and eat football. That was my passion. I knew anything and everything about football. I played all the time. It was what I wanted to do, but I never made it. I wasn't good enough. So I took the safe route, which was getting a job, which was what my parents wanted me to do. And I wouldn't say I always hated it, but I always knew it wasn't right for me. There was always something in the back of my mind telling me, I'm worth more than this. I'm destined for something better. I couldn't stand being in one place all the time, having to get up at a certain time, be in an office, not going home to a certain time. It just niggled me. And I was always looking for ways to do other things. Now, I never come from a business background. My father was, he had his own business, kind of. He was like self-employed. He wasn't particularly good at it. And I'm not disrespecting him. He'd be the first to say that. You know, he was the type of guy that would come out and do a job for someone and come home with a bag of apples because he didn't have the ability to charge someone, you know. And he was good at his job, but not good at running a business. So I didn't have that guidance from him. It was kind of my gut feeling. This is what I want to do. I want to do something on my own. And I fell into property. I was a estate agent, actually. I was working as an estate agent, and my area manager told me about another estate agency opening. And I thought, oh, I'm going to apply for that. And I applied for it, and I ended up working for the first time in my life for someone who was a little bit entrepreneurial. It was just a normal guy, set a business up, and I went in to work for him. And it was when I started to work for him that I started to understand about building businesses, buying property, investing in stuff. And he kind of took me under his wing a little bit, taught me, and I got the bug for it. And then I never really looked back. I started to build and build and build, buying more and more property, renting stuff out, flipping stuff, and then got to a stage where I didn't have to work anymore. And I wanted then to just quit employment full time, which I did. And then I started other businesses as well. When the property crash came in 2008, I kind of jumped ship and went into the care business. I built a care business up on the side of my property portfolio.
Fantastic. Mm. And over what time period was that?
My care business?
So you built the property business up? And over what time period did you do that?
I went into property, oh my days, I'm going back a long time now. I was definitely early 20s when I bought my first property. I was still living at home with parents. Actually, but the very first property I bought was a buy-to-let. I bought a buy-to-let before I bought a house for myself to live in. And I built that portfolio up probably until early 30s, maybe mid-30s. And then I went into the care business from there. And then after the care business, so I still got the care business, but along that line, I also built a gym as well and opened my first gym.
So you've gotten from the football and didn't quite make it.
No.
Could you tell me a little bit more about that?
I was good, and I know a lot of us think we were good, but I was good. You know, I played for my school, I played for the district, I played for a team called Woodford Town, it was a semi-pro team, and I had good opportunities, and I never took them. I never really believed in myself. There was always something in my mind that held me back, and I think it was, I come from a family that was very geared towards get an education, get a job, take the safe option. And that was always instilled in me growing up. You know, I was always told very few people make it in football. You shouldn't really go for that. Get a job in a bank. Be a bank manager. You'll have a job for life. That was my sort of teachings when I was growing up for my parents. And I kind of, although I had a lot of people telling me I was good and potentially I could make it, I don't think I ever believed I could, or I kind of felt as if I should go down that safe option. And that's what I did. So, yeah, I tried. I didn't try hard enough. I think if I was pushing my kids now, or my kids wanted to do it, not that I would push them, but if they wanted to do it, I'd put the belief in them that they can do it. So that's the difference between me now and me then. I've now got the belief I can do whatever I want to do. Back then, I never had that belief. So I took the safe option and I come out of school. I wasn't very good at school. I wasn't a scholar. I didn't really pass many exams. I wasn't interested in that. All I wanted to do was play football.
Yeah.
So when I left school, I looked at what I could do, and the only thing I felt I could do was sales, because I was a good talker and I had a personality, and I thought, yeah, I'll make my living out of sales. And everyone seems to be making money in property at that time. Estate agents was known for making lots of money, and it was the thing to do. And that's what I went into. And I went into sales, and I started to learn about property and how to sell property, how to value property. And then when, as I say, I got into the new company with the entrepreneur, I started to learn how to invest in property. But if I could turn it all back again, oh, there's always that niggling thing. I would have tried a little bit harder for football, but I'm happy. You know, it's led me here. I didn't make it, and who knows? Maybe if I had made it, I wouldn't have had a nicer life as I got now.
Do you regret it?
No, I don't regret it now because of things I've got in my life, and I could have gone on a completely different path. Who knows? You can't change it. You can't go back in time. There's no point in thinking about it or worrying about it, stressing about it or anything like that. So, no, I don't regret it. Not so much now. There used to be. For years, there was always that little element of me. When I was in my 20s, and maybe even early 30s, where you're still fit and you still can play, you know, and you're still pretty good, there was always that little element. I would pull up at the traffic lights and I'd be watching people playing football, or I would see a game and I'd be thinking, oh, if only I tried a little bit harder. But now, as I'm older, no, I don't regret it. I don't. I'm very happy. I'm very settled. I'm pleased with my life and what I'm doing. And like, it may not have worked out for me. I may have maybe got a contract and maybe gone on to be a superstar. I mean, bloody miserable. Who knows?
So take me forward to the care home now. You've now built up another business, and everyone knows that the dreaded C word, COVID. How is that looking? How has that impacted you?
That business, I took that business on I needed to reinvent myself. In 2008, I had a reasonably large portfolio. And I got a call from the manager at NatWest. And he said to me, we need you to come in to do an audit. Why? You've never asked me to do this in the past. And he said, well, you're a property company. You're in trouble. Am I? You know, I'm fine. Thank you very much. You know, I've got rents coming in and everything is good in my life. No, you're in trouble and we need you to come in. And I dug a little bit deeper with him. And he basically said, Lee, we've got no money left and we need our money back. And we want you to sell your properties so we can have our money back. I was like, well, you can't sell properties at the moment. You know, the world's gone to shit. And I'm happy with where I'm doing. I got rents coming in. You know, actually, I want to find more deals because there's a good potential now. But finding money at that particular time was pretty hard. I didn't know about a lot of the strategies that are around today with other people's money. I did it the old-fashioned way. I saved up a deposit and went to the bank and they loaned me the money. So I kind of looked at my options and I thought, actually, you know, he's probably right in many ways. I am a bit screwed because I can't build on this anymore. Or at least I didn't think I could. What am I going to do? And I see this business advertised, which was, it wasn't a care home, it was care in people's homes. So they had care workers, they trained them up and they sent them into people's properties to look after the people within the community. So predominantly elderly, some younger people with disabilities. So I approached this company and I took it on and I had no idea this business even existed a month or so earlier. I just looked at it and I thought, you know what? There's a recession on. It looks like it's going to be a long recession. This business isn't tied to interest rates. It's not tied to property. If people need care, they need care, recession or not. So actually, maybe this is kind of like a recession-proof business. I'll give it a go. And I took that business on and I inherited 10 members of staff overnight. A little office, about, I can't remember how many clients there was. There wasn't many clients. And it was turning over about 110K a year. And within 5 years, I took that business up to 120 members of staff at its peak. And it was turning over, I think, at its top, about 1.5 million. So I grew it really, really quickly. And I was really proud of that because I reinvented myself, went into a company I knew nothing about. I'd never managed people before. I'd never had a business before. It was always kind of self-employed, property developing. So overnight, I went on a massive, massive learning curve, which was brilliant in many ways and terrifying in many ways. And I made a lot, but I lost a lot as well. And it was a very stressful time. Good time in many ways, but yeah, I wouldn't necessarily recommend people do that, jumping into a business they know nothing about, especially when there's a lot of people involved and especially when you are responsible for people's lives as well. You know, because if you mess up, it can be devastating.
Talk to me about the stressful times because you paused then.
Oh, mate, I when you don't know, you don't know. And people can take advantage. And I employed what I thought was a very, very good manager. And I had, like I say, these 10 members of staff as well. And I think they quickly cottoned on, Lee hasn't got a clue about this business. He's got good ideas. His heart's in the right place. We can see what he wants to do. But he doesn't really know how this business works. And it was put on me that I have to do this and I have to do that and I have to do this. And I kind of went with it because I thought to myself, you know what? I don't believe in asking people to do things I don't know how to do. And I want to pick it up because I want to learn how to do this stuff. But what happened was, whereas I was very inexperienced at managing people, once I took all of this work, I then struggled to give it back and they wouldn't take it back. And I had the on-call phone, 24-hour phone. I had that day in, day out, 7 days a week. I had clients phoning me constantly. I had the families phoning me constantly. I had staff coming to me with issues. And they was bypassing the manager because she trained them all to come to me. And she was sitting there, this is lovely. And I was so stressed. I can remember going away for weekends with my little girl and taking her swimming and literally jumping out of the pool every 10 minutes just to check the on-call phone, just to make sure someone hadn't phoned. I couldn't relax. I just couldn't relax. And it was a good year or so of trying to get to grips with that, trying to learn how to take back control of that business and give work back to her, or eventually get rid of her, that freed me up a bit. And it wasn't until then I started to take on better staff and understand that business more and understand how to manage people that I'd become a little bit freer from it. And it took a long time. It took a lot out of me as well. Yeah. Painful memories in some ways.
So how did that affect your mental health and your state of mind?
Oh, it was bad. It was really bad. I've actually written a book about it, and that book's due to be published soon. And I wanted to write a self-help book, a business book. I didn't want to write a traditional kind of do this, do that kind of boring book. So I wrote a lot about the struggles I had within that care business and how I turned it around. And I can remember I was married at the time, and my ex-wife, she's now a lovely lady. I'm not going to knock her, I'm not going to put her down, but she didn't want to know anything about the business. She is my business, you get on with that. So if we was doing well, great. If we wasn't doing well, your problem. And I can remember I would come home at night, I would be exhausted, absolutely exhausted. I would go to sleep, the on-call phone would ring, I'd be up in the night, I'd be doing rotas, I'd be swapping around visits, I'd be talking to people. So the lack of sleep and the stress of being responsible for people's lives, it did get too much. It really got too much. I was rushed to hospital one day, I thought I had a heart attack. I sat in the chair, I couldn't move my arms, I couldn't move my legs. I can remember driving. I used to drive to work and I used to slap my hands because I couldn't feel the fingers. I just couldn't get anything in them. I was so stressed. And it got to a stage one day I went home and I just collapsed in the chair. My arms was over. I remember I couldn't even lift my arm up. It was just almost paralysed. Yeah, and we had a fish tank. And I can remember just staring at this fish tank, just watching the fish go around. And I couldn't do anything, and it was really probably bad timing. But my ex decided that was the moment she was going to have it out with me about why I wasn't interacting, why I wasn't doing this, why I wasn't doing that. And we never really argued, but that day, crikey, I just sat there and I just got this barrage of stuff, and I lost my temper a little bit and verbally hit back. And couldn't do anything physically. I couldn't move out the bloody chair. And I can remember sitting there all night, literally all night, and I didn't know what to do. I felt really bad, really down, really depressed. And I thought, then I need to make a change. I need to do something. And it started then with me leaving the family home, because I just felt I couldn't stay there any longer. It was just too much pressure on me. I had the gym at that time as well. So I probably took that gym on a little bit too early, because the business still was, the care business was going really well, but there were still things I needed to do within it to free me up completely. And I hadn't quite come away from that business completely. And I took the gym on as well. And financially, building the gym was a real drain. It's quite a big gym, costs a lot of money. There's a lot of outgoings every month. So I had the stress of the finances as well on me. And it just got, it just got too much. So I ended up moving out. And I left my family home. We had a big house in Chigwell, big detached house. And I walked out of that. And within a few days, I was in a little one-bedroom flat on my own.
Wow, that's amazing. But not a lot of people will know this, but you lost circa £1 million, didn't you?
I've lost more than that probably over the years. Yeah, I lost a lot of money. COVID obviously cost me a lot of money as well. Yeah. When the gym was closed, the outgoings on that gym was 20, 25 grand a month. Yeah. And I remember we got a grant within the first few weeks of £20,000. 20% you have to pay tax on. Yeah. So you don't get the full £20,000. And that was kind of given to me as a way of saying, we'll keep going. And it was like, what the hell am I going to do with this? Yeah, it's nice, but every month I need this to just pay the bills. So I was moving money around left, right and centre and trying to stave off the bailiffs who was hassling me for the money that I owed on the equipment that I leased, because I leased all the equipment in that gym. It's probably about 180 grand's worth of equipment that I'd on lease. The landlord was good. He was pretty considerate. He still wanted his money, but he kept in contact and, Lee, we'll work this out, we'll get through it kind of thing. I really appreciated that from him. But the leasing company, they was ruthless. They was hounding me constantly. And I tried to just bat them off and bat them off and bat them off and raise the money and get the money and beg, steal and borrow. And I did it. I managed to do it. And I think that's one thing about us entrepreneurial type of people. We might go through shit and we might struggle, but we never give up and we always find a way. And I found a way and I managed to get that money and I paid off that lease. And although it was kind of maybe the wrong thing to do, just pay it all off in one go, for my mental health, it was good because I could just say, there you go, I own the equipment now and leave me alone. And I did.
Good. One thing I wanted to touch on, you briefly mentioned your daughter then and your ex-wife. How has it impacted them to date, you going through that stress?
That's an interesting one. It's been like a roller coaster. It's up and down, up and down. And when I first moved out, I kind of said to my little girl, look, I just need a bit of break. I've got the gym being built and I need to be a bit closer to the gym. She was only 4, maybe 5, I can't remember now. And I kind of told her a little bit of a white lie. It was like, Daddy just needs to be a bit closer to the gym just to make sure it's done, built okay. And, I think my wife and I, we never thought it would be permanent. We kind of just thought it would be a break. I would sort myself out, move back in, and everything would be hunky-dory. So we kind of just tried to protect the daughter. And we give her this story. And it was horrible. I remember her coming to my flat and she stood there and she was looking around and I said, you do understand why Daddy's here, don't you? And she shook her head and said, no, Daddy, I don't. And it was really heartbreaking because you think they don't understand. They're just innocent, aren't they? They don't see what's going on. And because my wife and I, their ex-wife and I, never argued, she never saw any of the negative stuff. That was all, if we did have words, it was all saved for when she was in bed. We protected her. And she never really see there was any problems with that relationship. So, yeah, when I look back on that, that affected her badly. And then as I'd moved out, I know that my ex-wife had trouble coping and my daughter was exposed to that and she was exposed to certain conversations about me, and mine and her relationship did suffer. It really did suffer. And she still turned up. She still went out with me. She never gave up on me completely, but there was elements of it that I could see she wasn't happy with and she was really confused about. And it was horrible watching her go through that. And it took a long time for her to understand, actually, not all of it was Daddy's fault. He's always tried his best and he's always turned up. And I never missed a weekend. I never missed a school play. I never missed a parent's evening or anything like that. I was always there. I did as much as I possibly could. I just wasn't there all the time. And slowly, she kind of got used to Daddy not being there. And it kind of eased with my ex as well. She kind of, I wouldn't say Overnight, she got over things, but time heals. Mm. Yeah, and then the negative comments towards me were tackled and stopped, and that was a massive thing for my daughter. And in fairness to my ex-wife, I don't think she really understood what the damage was happening, that she was letting my daughter see all of that. And when it was highlighted to her, she did stop. And then my and my daughter's relationship kind of started to get fixed. And then I met my new partner and we had this new relationship. And again, that was a challenge, you know, because all of a sudden it's like, oh, hang on a minute, who's this other woman? And the other woman's got a daughter as well. And I don't like that, you know. And now this woman and that daughter's living with my daddy and I'm not living with my daddy. And, oh, there was a lot of conflict and a lot of heartache and a lot of ups and downs and tears. But I honestly believe if you keep at it and if you keep turning up and you keep doing your best and you keep giving, you get back eventually. And that's what I did. And over a period of time, she worked it all out and she come to terms with it. And she's very, very happy. She comes here. She spends a lot of time with me. COVID was great, actually, for that. You know, if one positive come out of COVID, it was I had my daughter every other week. You know, she wasn't at school. So every other week, she lived here for a week. So how long was your lockdown? A year, roughly? Yeah, about a year. So for that year, she pretty much lived with me a lot. And it was wonderful. So you've always got to find the positive in every situation, I believe. And that was a massive positive for me. And it really give. And we had a baby. Agra and I had a baby. So we had Lucy during lockdown as well, the first lockdown. And that gave my eldest daughter time to really bond with Lucy as well. So that was fantastic. So although I lost a lot of money, and it was, you know, circa £1 million, there was real benefits as well, real positives. And I appreciate that time I had with my little girl and that time my little girl had to bond with her new sister as well.
So you've taken the positives from COVID, losing her money, and then leads me nicely onto now Agger.
Yeah.
So let's introduce Agger.
Yeah, Agger actually worked for me. And it was really weird because she's Polish and her name is Agnieszka. And at the time, I had an Agnieszka working with me. And her CV kept coming up, Agnieszka. And I thought, oh, you know what, it's going to be too bloody confusing. Two Agnieszkas in the same company. And she doesn't really have the experience I need. So I parked her CV a few times. And I don't know what it was. It just kept popping up. Every time I went on, I couldn't find what I was looking for manager-wise. And her CV just kept coming up. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to give her a call and I'll get her in. And she came in and she was so full of energy, so full of enthusiasm. She had so much passion for care. I kind of was hooked on her straight away. It's like, I want you as my manager. And I know you don't have the experience in home care because it's all residential, but I'll teach you the crossover. And I brought her in. I had no ideas of romantic notions or anything like that. In actual fact, and I'm being perfectly honest with you, you have a type, she's not my type. And she knows that, you know, she knows that. And not the typical type I go for. And she worked with me for a few years. And then she see me go through a lot of stress and pressure and whatever. And she was really supportive and really helped me with the business and actually took that business on from where I took it on from as well. And everything was running really, really well. And then after I split up and after when I moved into my flat, and I kind of started thinking about dating again and seeing other people again, she had gone through a breakup as well. And I don't know, it just felt right. We kind of got a little bit close. We had a few sort of meetings and stuff like that. And I guess I engineered a few of those meetings as well. And it went really well. And we always got on. We always had a good laugh and we always had a bit of chemistry. We worked really well together. And then it was, you know what? How do you feel about this? And we was, yeah, I feel that could work. And we kind of started seeing each other. And that was really weird. Honestly, Lewis, the first date I took her on, I took her out for a date. And it was a Monday night. Monday nights are quiet, aren't they? Let's go out. It's a Monday night. Because I had a lot of employees around the area, so I knew a lot of people. And I didn't want people to know, really. It's, you know, I just want to make sure this is going to be okay before I introduce her as my partner. So I took her out Monday night, and I'm sitting there in this restaurant. All of a sudden, I've looked up. My nephew walks in. My other nephew walks in. My ex-sister-in-law walks in. The girlfriend of the nephews walked in. And I'm sitting there, oh, my day. And they're looking at me, and I'm looking at them, and I'm with this new woman. And they was good as God. They didn't come over. They didn't make a scene. There was nothing there. And I just thought, you know what? This is going to be a hassle. Because I was pretty well known where I lived. A lot of people, big network. And after we got together, and it was quite quick, actually, I'd said to her, I'm thinking of reinventing myself again. I'm thinking of moving away. I don't want to go too far because of my daughter, maybe an hour, hour and a half maximum. And I've always wanted to live by the coast. And she was, you know what, I've always wanted to live by the coast as well. It's, you know, being by the sea is something that I find relaxing. If you go, I'll come with you. I was like, really? Okay, let's do it. And we drove up to the Suffolk coast, and we went to Alderbury, went to Southwold. She didn't like them. And then I felt it was a bit too far as well. And we come to Felixstowe, which I didn't want to come to. I really didn't. I've been here a few times and I wasn't that keen on it, but I'd only gone down to the amusements and places like that. When we come here, she was like, you know what? I want to live here. I was like, okay, let's live here. And it was just literally just like that. And we're both very, very similar. We'll make very, very quick decisions and we'll just see how it pans out. And that's what we did. And I moved down here just before she did. I got everything settled and brought my daughter down, showed her the house I was renting at the time. She liked it. And Aga come down with her daughter a few weeks after. I think it was maybe 2 or 3 weeks after, and moved in. And we've been here, I think, nearly 4.5 years. Yeah.
Yeah. So if it's gone from a restaurant to buying a house together in Felix, though.
Yeah, literally, literally. And it was really, really quick. I mean, we did know each other for a year or two before. You know, we worked with each other. When you work with people, you get to know them pretty well, and especially in an office. And you see people within the office more than you do your family, you know. So yeah, we kind of knew each other really well. We kind of knew we got on with each other. And I think we just had a feeling this is going to be right. This is going to work. And it has. You know, since we come here, we've had 2 kids. We started another business. And life is really good. I'm really happy. I'm much more relaxed these days than ever before. You know, I haven't been as relaxed living here by the sea in all my life as I am now.
Fantastic. There's one question I want to ask before. Two questions. I think as men, we generally struggle to show our emotions. Do you feel that now it's got better over time with your new partner?
100%. I tell you the mistake I made with my ex-partner, and I'll tell you what I did this time around. And actually, I write about this in the book, because a lot of the book is about me becoming vulnerable. And me being exposed and how I used to live my life compared to how I lived it now. When I met my ex, she was very young. We were both very young. And she was very much... I don't know if it's saying we kind of decided to, or I did it by natural... I was the leader. I pretty much made the decisions. I did things. If there was a problem, I dealt with it. And I kind of shielded her from everything, which I thought was a really good thing to do. Yeah, there's problems, don't worry about her, don't let her worry about that. I'll take it on my shoulders, I'll deal with that. She's never going to worry about that. And that's okay when life is good. When life is good, you can do that. But when the shit hits the fan and it really starts closing in on you, if you've got everything on your shoulders and you've got no one to share it with, it's consuming and it can swallow you up. And when I tried to share problems with her, she was so used to me sorting it out, she didn't know how to deal with it. So she was always, hey, your problem, you sort it out. That's what you always do. So I kind of can't really blame her, really. I don't blame her. I take the blame myself, because I naturally, I invented that role for myself. So I would never share anything I would always keep it to myself. My motto was a problem shared is a problem doubled. You know, they say a problem shared is a problem halved. I think that's the saying. Mm-hmm. I used to say, no, the problem shared is a problem doubled. If I've got that problem and I tell you, you've got that problem. I'm not going to do that to you. I'm going to sort it out myself. So I lived like that. And I kind of felt that was the way I wanted it to be. I just wanted to deal with it myself, and that I'm the man, you know, I'm just going to deal with it, and I'll sort it out. And I did it. I did it for a long time until things got so bad I couldn't do it anymore. When I met Aga, I had her wanting to help me and wanting me to share things, and I was so not used to it because that's how I'd lived my life for so many years. It's like, no, I'll... And I'd done the same mistakes over and over again. And I would kind of try to protect her and not talk to her. And she would be looking at me like, what's wrong? You know, and getting angry with me. So it was funny, really, because she's very different to me. If there's a problem with her, she wants me to, what's the matter? Come on, put my arm around her. Let's work it out together. At that particular time, if there's a problem with me, I'd want to leave me alone, and so I could work it out. That's what I was used to. So when I would see her struggling with things, I would think, I better leave her alone. You know, I'll go for a walk, I'll go to the pub or whatever, she'll be fine. She'd be sitting there fuming at me because I just walked out. When I had a problem, she'd be consuming me. What's the matter? She was treating me how she wanted to be treated. I was treating her how I wanted to be treated, and we was clashing. And it wasn't until we figured out this is wrong that we worked out how to kind of love each other and how to help each other. So now when there's a problem, I don't bugger off down the pub. I spend time with her and I work it out with her. When I've got a problem, she gives me a small amount of time to sort it out. And then I've learned that if I can't sort it out, I go to her. Listen, I'm really struggling with this. Can you help me? And she will help me. So that communication now we've got with each other and that way of working with each other really, really works well. It's hard. It was really hard for me to do it to start off with because it is kind of making yourself vulnerable. It's like, I've got this problem and I don't know what to do. And I hated saying that to start off with. I loved going in and saying, oh, that's a problem, I sorted it. But now I recognise if I do that and I do that too often, it becomes too much of a problem. It could mentally send me in a downward spiral. So I don't keep it in anymore. I'll try to work it out myself if I can, because I like that. Mm-hmm. But I get to a stage where, okay, I'm assessing over this a bit too much now. I go, I've got a problem. Can you help me with it? And 9 times out of 10, she has the answer. It helps solve it a lot quicker. So having that communication, I would encourage anybody to just talk openly. If you've got problems, talk about it.
Fantastic. Yeah. So define, what does happiness mean to you?
Happiness is, I always say, I want to be able to do what I want, when I want, with who I want, and how I want.
Mm.
Yeah. If I can do all of those 4 things, I'm as happy as anybody.
Mm.
You know, I'm not the wealthiest man in the world financially, but if I've got those 4 things, I feel the wealthiest man. I need to have that ability to be able to do what I want when I want, really, and have my kids around me, have Aga around me. I don't need a lot anymore. I don't obsess over having the fastest cars, the biggest house, the most money, or anything like that. I just want that. I guess is it freedom? Is you say freedom, maybe. I don't like the word freedom, actually, but I guess it's just having that choice. Choice, that's probably a better word. If I've got choices, I'm happy, you know.
You touched on a word earlier, which was a turning point in your life, and what I've taken is you took responsibility for your actions.
I do. I don't ever blame anybody else. It's all, you know, I look at everything. Okay, that happened to me. What can I learn from it?
Mm.
Yeah? Okay, well, if I blame you, say, bloody Lewis's fault, I've detached myself from that. It's your fault, you know, and I'm not going to learn anything from that. Whereas I look at everything, and I look at everything, okay, that happened to me, take responsibility, take the blame, what can I learn from it? And we all do it. Everybody does it. We all ask ourselves the same question, why me? Why me? Why did that happen to me? Now, a successful person will say, why did that happen to me? What can I learn from it? What can I do to make sure it doesn't happen again? An unsuccessful and unhappy person will be, why me? Why is it always me? Oh, woe is me. You know, that's my life. Always happens to me. Same question, just looking at it a different way.
So what can we do in order to be the best version of ourselves and be the man?
You need to have a reality check. You need to look at where you are now. Yeah. Where are you now? Where are you with your family? Where are you with your health? Where are you with your wealth? Where are you with your business or career? Where are you with your development? Yeah. What is the reality for you now? Where do you want it to be? Yeah. Gain that clarity. You know, mark everything out of 10, 1 to 10, you know, 1 being the lowest, 10 being the highest, yeah? So let's say your family life is a 3. That's not great. You need that, or you should have that high, or maybe you want it higher. Okay, what do you want? What is the ultimate goal for you to be a 10? What does that look like to you? Write it down. Get clarity on where you are now, where you want it to go. And then decide, is that realistic? You know, is that achievable? Can I get there? There's no point in me now saying, you know, I want to play for Arsenal. I'm not going to do it. It's not realistic. Yeah, it's never going to happen. It's got to be realistic. It's got to be achievable. Okay, these are my goals. Is it realistic? Is it achievable? Yes. Okay, how am I going to make that happen? Then take that end goal, work yourself backwards, and just put in little steps that you're going to be able to work towards. We do this exercise where we take people on this journey. So where are you now, Lewis? Okay, you're here. Where do you want to be, Lewis? You want to be there. Is that realistic? Is it achievable? Yes, it is. Okay, right. Now, let's sit down. And we always go for 30 to 50 ideas. We just literally get them down on paper. What can you do to get there? And we just boom, 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 boom. We bash it out. Okay, right. What are you going to pick first to start working on that? And I guarantee you, when you do that and you write these ideas down, you'll have all the answers. And it won't be the first ones, funny enough. The first ones you come up with are usually the easy things that, you know, you can do and you know you've got to be doing. But when you get down to about 25, it gets hard. And then your brain becomes more creative. You pick things out of your head that you never even knew was there. And it's like, bloody hell, I can do that. And that's going to make a massive difference. And when you write this list out, and then we just look at it and we just plan it out. Okay, what do you want to do first? Right, let's make a plan now. So over the next period of time that we agree on, you just get through this list. And every day you're moving forward to taking that from a 2 to a 10. And that's what we do ourselves. And we do that with our clients. So we work out exactly where they are, where they want to go, and then just put that plan in place. And I think the hardest thing for a lot of people is being accountable and staying on track, because life can get shitty, you can take over, things happen. And if you can find someone, it doesn't have to be a coach, it doesn't have to be someone you pay, it can be anyone, you know, as long as they know what you want to do and they're willing to help you with it, just get someone to help you, keep you accountable, keep you on track, and don't set such massive goals that need to be done tomorrow. Set yourself a realistic time and just do a little bit every day. And I think consistency, a small little bit of growth, is like investing, isn't it? You invest a little bit, invest over a period of time, it compounds up and it becomes this massive change. And that's all you need to do for your life. And anyone can do it. Not that hard.
Fantastic. I mean, so you've got your coaching program now, your mentoring program, which is Be The Man, and you sort of summarise that.
That is it in a nutshell. That is it. This is working with men who want to be successful. They want to have a happy life. They want to have a work-life balance. They maybe want to build a big business or go a bit further in a career, but they recognise maybe it's not so great at home. They need to improve that, or the success they've had has maybe hold on the pounds and they don't feel as fit or as healthy, as attractive as they want to be. And we look at all of it and we audit it. Yeah, we just do an audit on everything within that life, within that circle, the circumference, and we work out really what's important to them first, work on that first, and then go for all the other stuff and build it up. So everything goes from being a small number to a big number. If we can get tens around that the whole circle, then you've got a great life. And you know where you're going, you have complete clarity, you're fit, you're healthy, you look good, you feel good, your family's good, your business is good, your career's good, you're getting wealthier. What more can you want?
It sounds fantastic to me, mate. So if you could, there's one more question before that, actually. What's the next, where do you see yourself like going next? What's the biggest goal for you next? Yeah. Or is there another goal after this?
I
only ask that because you strike me as someone that doesn't just move from thing to thing to the next thing to the next thing. You will stick at something, you will achieve it, and then it will become something else. You don't stand still.
That's a good observation, because I love building things, and I love getting it to a certain level, and then I love bringing people in to help me either build it further or take over it. And that's what I've done with the care business and the gym. So for me, with the Be The Man project and the coaching programs, that's still in its infancy. So we're building that out. And Agatha's working with me on that. She's helping me with that. And I love it because we get to work together again and we get to share some great successes with people. So for me, over the next 5 years, it's building that business to where I want it to be. And the five-year goal is probably to be abroad somewhere within the next 5 years, a nice hot country by the sea, because we got it all here, but we don't have the weather.
Yeah.
You know, I love the sun.
That's never going to
happen. No. And my daughter she'll be an adult then, and she can make a decision. I want her to come with me. And I want to go abroad. I want to take my eldest daughter away. I want to teach her everything I know. I want to teach Elizabeth, Lucy, Luke. Lucy and Luke will still be young, but I want to spend time with them, teaching them about business, teaching them about life, and setting them up for success. So Annabelle will be the first, because she'll be the first to become an adult. I want to spend at least a year with her abroad, educating her and giving her a really great start after her school education finishes. And still have the Be The Man program. We run it from abroad. And I've got ideas of how I want it to expand, but I have to be careful, because I have this brain that works at 100 miles an hour. I have so many ideas and I can get so carried away. And I can be working on this and all of a sudden, that's a great idea. I want to work on that now. So I'm not letting myself think about those just yet. I just want to get to the stage where Be The Man is successful. It provides me my income that I want it to give me. I can go abroad. I can educate my kids. And then I can take it to another level if I want to.
Perfect. So for anyone listening, what advice can you give them from your personal experiences?
Don't keep everything for yourself. I think that's the biggest lesson I've learned. When I first started to get into property, and I went under the wing of the entrepreneurial guy I talked about at the start, he, in my opinion, could have been a multi-millionaire. He made it to a millionaire, maybe a couple of million, not sure. But he was very secretive. He was very guarded. He would never share anything apart from a very small amount of people. And he taught me to be like that. He taught me to never share anything. Keep it all to yourself. If you've got a deal, don't tell anyone. You know, you get that deal over the line. And that keeps you small, because you're only working on that little thing, and you're hiding in the corner and you're trying to protect it from everyone, and you're using up so much energy trying to keep everything a secret. And I've learned over the years, actually, just let everybody know. Just tell people, because when you tell people, people are interested. People want to help. People want to get involved. People want to learn from you, you know, and it keeps you accountable as well, because when I shout from the rooftops, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do the Be The Man project, this is going to be a great coaching program, blah, 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 blah. If I don't do it, I look an idiot. Yeah. If I don't tell anyone and I keep it a secret, and no one knows, and I decide, well, I don't go do it, then I can get out of it really easily. So these days I'm much more open to talking about things, being upfront about things, letting people know what I'm doing, you know, and it attracts people to you because people get excited and people want to be around you and they want to learn from you, and you build your network. And the more people you got within your network, the more opportunities you've got and the more people you've got to help you. So I think the number one advice is don't be scared. Don't keep things to yourself. Just decide what you want to do. Like within my program, take a view of where you are now. Take a view of where you want to be. Decide, is it realistic? Is it achievable? Reflect clarity on where you want to go. And then tell people you're going to go. And if people want to help you, take that help. You know, it's there. There's so much help out there. There's so many things you can do these days. It's so much easier these days. There's so much information. You know, when I was younger, you didn't have all this information. You didn't have the internet or anything like that. So it was a bit harder. But now you can build networks. You can attract so many great people just by being clear with what you want, knowing what you want.
I think that's the danger sometimes, is that people think they know until they've met someone like yourself that can give them that clarity and go dig a little bit deeper and go, right, what is it that you actually want? So leads me on to my last question, which is, where can people reach you?
Facebook is probably the main source I use. We've got the Be The Man community, so people can become part of that group. They can always email me, lee@bethemancommunity. That's the email. If they want to email and ask me any questions about the coaching programs or anything really, they need advice on anything. So, yeah, I'd say the Facebook group and email are the best ones.
So we can add you as a friend on Facebook. You've got the Be The Man community and your email.
And the email as well, yeah.
Lee, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And really appreciate it.
We'll get you back on again.
Yeah, I'd love to. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Thank you for listening to the Connect You podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, please share this on your socials, tag me, and leave a review.